first item of business is we have two public hearings tonight. First, public hearing is on the proposed local law number F of 2019, a local law amending the Tompkins County Charter, Article 26, Office of Human Rights and Human Rights Commission. Are there any speakers on that item? All right, I will close that public hearing and open the next one for proposed local law number G of 2019, a local law establishing a 5-cent paper carryout bag reduction fee in Tompkins County. Are there any speakers on the 5-cent fee on bags? You can just go up to the microphone and tell us your name and what town or city you live in, please.
Hi, my name is Ann Klingensmith. I'm from Danby. And I'm the Danby representative to the Environmental Management Council, and I'm on the Waste Reduction Subcommittee of the EMC. And so I'm here to speak in favor of the fee. I've done a lot of reading, obviously, over the last year and a half. And whatever side of the issue you're on, you know, whether you're speaking single-use versus reusable, plastic versus paper, fee versus no fee, you can pretty much find a study that supports your point of view. But what makes sense to me, based on the reading that I've done and using some common sense, is that, number one, paper is a little better than plastic. It's not really better than plastic. But reusable is better than single use, and I guess some people were like, well, I'm not single use, I use them again, but a reusable bag you can reuse hundreds of times. I've got one I've used for 8 years. So I think that reusable is better than single use. So we don't want to encourage people to use paper. A fee will disincentivize paper, might help people remember to bring their bags because people don't like to pay even a few pennies extra. So I encourage you to pass the bag fee. Thank you.
Thank you, Ann. I've got two other people who signed up for the public privilege, but I assume it's, I'll call you now, Ethan Gormley and then Hannah Ring.
Hello, everybody. My name is Ethan Gormley, and I'm the project coordinator for the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG, at SUNY Cortland. I'm joined by Carrie Ann Kolbeck, Melissa Safford, and Daniel Reicher, all students at SUNY Cortland. We're here today to show support for a fee on paper bags in Tompkins County. We know that a fee on paper bags will help people transition away from single-use bags and switch to durable or reusable bags. It's often thought that paper bags are an environmentally smart choice, but that just isn't true. Paper bag production wastes clean water. It takes 1 gallon of water to produce just one paper bag. And that one-to-one ratio is even more alarming when taken into consideration with the other resources that paper bag production demands. From clear-cutting forests around the world, which is, of course, a leading cause of climate change, or using fossil fuel-based transportation to transport the bulky and heavy bags, the implication of an enhanced paper bag reliance has lasting effects on our climate and resources that cannot go unrecognized. While it was disappointing, when the statewide ban of plastic bags did not include a mandatory fee on paper bags, we knew even then that there were local governments who were leading the way for environmental protection and public health in New York State. Tompkins County, from our view at SUNY Cortland, is certainly one of those leaders. And today we ask Tompkins County to continue to lead the way and set that example for other municipalities to follow for a cleaner, safer, and healthier environment for everyone. It's a crucial time. We all know this, and it is essential that we have these leaders in this time. So thank you again for all your work.
Thank you very much. I have Hannah Ring.
It's always hard following a tall person. Hello, my name is Hannah Ring. I am the Central New York Program Coordinator for Citizens Campaign for the Environment. Thank you for the opportunity to speak tonight and actually for holding a public hearing on this. CCE wholeheartedly supports the 5-cent fee, and we applaud Tompkins County for your leadership and truly addressing disposable bag pollution. Similar to what everyone else has been saying, paper bags are not environmentally friendly, even though people think so. While the state did pass a ban, again, they did not pass a fee on paper. And that has really left a huge gap, but also a huge opportunity for Tompkins County to become a leader for other communities and counties to follow, as well as for the state. While the environmental impacts of plastic are obvious and immense and they warrant a ban, we cannot neglect to address paper bags. Like he said, the amount of trees that are being cut down, the water use, the energy, it's also contributing to air pollution and water pollution. The goal isn't to get people to switch from plastic to paper, it's to switch from disposable to reusable. I think we can all agree on that. Other communities that have only passed a ban on plastic bags but have neglected to address paper, they are suffering the consequences of that. They find that it's not actively changing the public's behavior, and people are just switching over to the free option. In Westport, Connecticut, they just did a ban on plastic bags. They did nothing on paper, and as a result, they saw virtually no paper bag use, jump all the way up to consumers, 45% of consumers using paper. That's not the result we want. We want people to switch to reusable bags. They're environmentally friendly, they're cost-effective, and they reduce the amount of pollution entering our environment and also the amount of solid waste entering our landfills. As you all know, we're amidst a solid waste crisis, so we can't just continue to dump into our landfills. Oftentimes, paper isn't always recycled appropriately. Over 200 municipalities across the country and the world have enacted some form of legislation to effectively curb disposable bag pollution, and Thompson County is following suit to thoroughly address this issue. A fee in Thompson County in conjunction with the paper bag ban will change the public's behavior. In February of this year, CalRecycle, which manages California's laws regarding solid waste, they did a study of the impacts of their ban on paper and 10-cent fee 6 months after that law went into effect. They studied and surveyed thousands of grocery stores and retailers, and they found that just 6 months later, in 86% of transactions, consumers brought their own bag. They weren't buying reusable bags at the store, and they weren't buying paper bags. Now, obviously, this goes along with a huge, massive reduction, like 85% reduction in plastic use and a 61% reduction in paper bag use. That's what we're trying to achieve here, and I know that this law will do so. Additionally, I know a fee kind of makes people think that this is going to cost people money, and yeah, you see a 5-cent fee, but in the long run, this is actually saving consumers money and retailers, as well as the municipality who faces the ancillary impacts of paper bags, cleaning them up and disposing of them. Studies in California have also shown that a ban on paper, or a fee on paper and a ban on plastic, it has little to no economic impact. In fact, U.S. retailers spend over $4 billion a year just purchasing disposable bags, and they're not giving those out for free out of the goodness of their heart. They are using that money, or they're then passing that cost on to consumers. Now, a fee on paper, it will encourage consumers to bring their own bag, which is the goal, and it'll also reduce the amount of paper bags that retailers will then have to buy, reducing their overall cost as well. Again, CC, we fully support this local legislation. Tompkins County has continuously stood out as a leader in sustainability, and this is the next step forward, putting a fee on paper bags. It'll encourage consumers to bring their own bags. It'll save natural resources, protect our environment, and really set an example for the state to follow suit. CCE strongly encourages the county to pass this local law, and I really appreciate the time to speak tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Hannah. Would anyone else like to address the issue of the 5-cent fee on paper bags? All right, I will close the public hearing and open the meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature for November 19th, 2019. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the United States of America, and to the Republic which stands, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Roll call of members.
Henry Granison.
Here.
Rich John.
Here.
Anna Kellis.
Here.
Dan Klein has asked to be excused. Ann Corman.
Present.
Mike Lane.
Here.
Leslyn McBean Claiborne.
Present.
Dave McKenna?
Here.
Glenn Morey has also asked to be excused. Mike Sigler?
Here.
Shauna Black?
Here.
Amanda Champion?
Here.
Deborah Dawson?
Here.
Martha Robertson?
Here.
12 members present.
Thank you. For before we go to public privilege, I would like to just say I think we'll like to reorder things a little bit and take the resolution on the local law for plastic bags.
Paper bags.
Paper bags. And if members of the public have stayed, yes, we'll do that after public privilege of the floor and after municipal official. I don't want to keep ducks in waiting. So, all right. We have one paper from Adam and Elizabeth for public privilege. By signing this, you agree to the following. I agree to a three-minute time limit. I agree not to raise my voice. I agree not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. I agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. After 3 minutes, I agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring my time to another person is not permitted. I agree that if I cause a disruption and am asked to leave, I will leave the chambers. Hello.
Hello.
Go ahead.
All right. Hi, everybody. Thanks for the opportunity to be here to speak. So I'm Adam Levine. I'm a professor up at Cornell in the government department. And I also run an organization called Research for Impact, which connects researchers and practitioners and policymakers. And as part of that, we're working to start a new initiative that is going to hopefully connect research and policymakers here in Tompkins County. And we spoke with Anna about it, and she suggested that we come and sort of present and introduce ourselves in front of everybody all at once. And so I'm going to turn it over to Elizabeth right now.
Yes, thank you again for having us. My name is Elizabeth Day, and I'm also a professor at Cornell. And I, in previous work, I've done a lot of work with state legislators and trying to understand kind of the barriers and things that they need in terms of accessing information when they need it during the decision-making process. And what we heard over and over again is that when part-time legislators with few staff are trying to find information when they need it, they face a lot of barriers. And so that's kind of what the impetus for this project was.
And we moved really quickly. So really all we wanted to say is, again, to introduce ourselves. And in order to make this as seamless as possible, what we were planning to do is to send emails the week after Thanksgiving. And so we're going to send them. It'll be from one of us. It'll come from a Cornell account, so you know exactly sort of that it's real and it's authentic. And we hope to be in touch right after that. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And you can just write to Kathy Covert, and she'll get it to all of us. ccovert@tompkins-co.org. It's on the website. I'm sure you can find it. We don't have any other blue forms. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to speak? All right. Duxon, welcome. How are you?
Hello.
Thanks so much for coming.
Let's see. Well, I think George went over the budget, so we passed it. Stayed under the tax cap just barely. The exciting thing is we approved the plan unit development. This is a, you know, custom zoning essentially for the Immaculate Conception project. INHS is a big thing, so I'm very excited about that. And we approved another. No, it's contentious, the intercity bus service at Green Street, but we added another provider who is, they only have one bus a day to New York City, so there is another option now. And then planning and economic development met last week. The big discussion was ADUs, accessory dwelling units, where they passed something to circulate to the public that does not have an owner occupancy requirement, limits to one ADU per lot, I think limits to two residents per ADU, and I forget what else, limiting the number of primary structures, number of like houses on a given lot, which is a big issue on South Hill last year. Let's see, Heather McDaniel came to talk about CTAP, the tax abatement program, and so council had passed a requirement for tax abatement projects to have 20% affordable housing if they're going to get endorsed by the city, and IDA feels like we had passed doesn't quite work, that the 30-year abatement might be too long. And so they are, well, a committee of IDA is currently examining or coming up with a proposal of their own for that. We also had an interesting number that large projects have 30 to 40% local labor, since some members of council were interested in that, whereas smaller projects have close to 80% or more local labor, due in part to the labor requirements on a big project and the number of developers that we have locally. They also passed to council a waterfront plan this summer. There was like a public open house type thing at the farmers market, where the public got a chance to give input to the waterfront plan, and that's out now. And also a developer agreement for a Green Street garage to council. This outlines the basic parameters of the housing, and if it works out, the conference center that will be built at Green Street Garage, with many details still to be worked out. That's it.
Thank you, Duck. Any questions or comments? Anna and then Rich.
I just had one about the plan, the ADU plan that's being circulated. You said that it doesn't currently have a homeowner occupancy requirement, but it does currently. You can build multiple primary dwelling units on a lot as long as the lot is large enough, and it explicitly removes that, doesn't it not?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
Rich.
First, thank you for your budget adjustments for the Green New Deal, the additional amount you put in, and the additional housing money.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited.
That'll be a great partnership.
We've already spent it.
Oh, good. That's what it's for. I had a question about CTAP, and the expansion of the boundary of CTAP goes to the south edge of Cascadilla Creek, but it does not include the north side of Cascadilla Creek. And I was wondering, what was the reasoning behind stopping there?
I don't know that we really discussed that, actually. It was a staff proposal that I think we just agreed with. Why is it stopped there? I suppose there'd be resistance to more development by some of my colleagues past that boundary. But if you're implying that if there's a question about whether maybe we should expand out there, then I think that is reasonable. I mean, there will be projects up there like Gun Hill Apartments and whatnot.
I was talking about the area next to the golf course on the water.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good question. I don't have an answer for you.
Okay.
But it's worth thinking about.
Thanks.
Henry?
I'd heard before that you were going to be doing something about dogs on the commons. What's happened to that issue?
We have these new commissions, and one of them, the Community Life Commission, is looking at that. No, I'm sorry. This is the Public Safety and Information Commission that's looking at that. We expect a recommendation from them, I think, soon, in the next month or two.
Allowing or not allowing?
But either way, I don't know. I really don't know where they are on this. But this continues to be a topic that comes up, so I think they will make a recommendation one way or the other. Not just for allowing them or not allowing them, but for signage and enforcement probably too.
Henry, did you want to say something?
I heard that they were leaning towards allowing them, but
I mean, in full transparency, that it would be my preference. It's just to allow them, but that's just me.
I think you'd have to talk to Lou before you do anything about not allowing them. But also, the more people you have living on the commons, it gets, you know.
Right. City Center is a pet friendly building, and it's right on the commons.
Right. Anybody else have anything for Duxon? All right. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
To see you. All right. So if we can go to the resolution that you have, Deborah, resolution S.
All right. I am happy to move resolution, S, adoption of a local law number of 2019, a local law establishing a 5-cent paper carryout bag reduction fee in Tompkins County. ID 8997.
Thank you. Seconded by Amanda. Discussion? Leslin.
So I want to make sure that I'm understanding this correctly. So when I go to the grocery store, Wegmans, that has banned single-use plastic bag, and now I can get a paper bag or I can get one of the Wegmans reusable bags, Wegmans charges me $5 for the paper bag. This would be in addition, or 5 cents, would be in addition to the 5 cents that Wegmans charges, so I'll now be paying 10 cents if I choose.
No.
Okay, so what is it?
Is Wegmans charging 5 cents?
Yes.
Yes, for the paper bags.
They're doing that now.
Oh, they're doing it now.
Yeah, Wegmans has been charging 5 cents for the paper bags. So what is this doing for me? What is this doing?
Deborah, you want?
Well, I'm not. I wasn't aware that Wegmans was charging 5 cents for paper bags.
Okay.
It's news to me.
So this is not an addition. It's just the same thing. It's now a law.
Jen. Yeah. So what this would do would be to create this charge, it would be paid to the state. The state will keep 60% of the revenues from this for environmental conservation projects and an environmental conservation fund, and 40% of it will be returned to the taxing jurisdictions to be used to pay for reusable bags for members of the community that are financially disadvantaged.
Thank you. You read my mind. I was asking what's the next step for people who that might be too much.
So does that mean Wegmans is just collecting the money now, or do we know?
I can't speak for Wegmans.
Amanda.
They're not keeping the money. They have donating it. I can't remember exactly to whom. Their plan was to start this early. They knew once the state law was passed, they wanted to get started with it, just because it's coming. So it will not be on top of their fee.
Thank you.
It will, yeah.
Jonathan, did you want to add anything?
No, I think pretty much said what I was going to say is it won't change what Leslin do. It will change what Wegmans does because they'll have to do something now different with that 5 cents, basically send it to the state instead of doing what Amanda described.
But thank you.
Sure.
Amanda.
Yeah, and I was also going to say that the Waste Reduction Committee, which Ann is on, we have begun collecting donation bags. I've gotten about 200 from Wegmans. She's gotten quite a lot from the Lab of Ornithology. We're checking into other businesses who are donating these bags, and we are going to be putting them in places like the Ithaca Free Clinic, food pantries, giving them to places where people who may not be able to purchase reusable bags can take them. So that's one of the initiatives that we're doing.
Ann, and then Anna.
Thank you. I was sad to hear that when the state was going to enact the ban on plastic bags, that they didn't across the board do a 5 cent fee for the whole state on paper bags. And but I am proud of Tompkins County that it looks like we're going to be passing this, and with a lot of community support. I was also, on the other hand, sad to hear that last I knew there were only three, us including Tompkins County, only three counties in New York State that were going to pass a fee on paper bags. So I really hope that the state, which I heard is reconsidering this now, is going to change the law that it's mandatory, because it's not having its desired effect. I see Barbara running.
Barb. Hello, Barb Ekstrom.
Hello, here we are again. There's lots to report. The state is going to change the law this legislative session. That's the intent. They are going to make it equitable, and all counties will be required to pass the 5 cents. Many of my counterparts told me recently at a conference I was at that they chose not to in their particular locations due to political reasons. There were a lot of elections going on, et cetera. There are four places that are doing this. Onondaga County will definitely be doing it next year, but we are one. New York City, of course, is another. And Ulster County has already done it, and Niagara County is also doing it. A lot of places don't believe that the state is going to reimburse local municipalities the 2 cents, and there was a special session about this, and we were told that the reimbursements are going to happen every month. I know that that might be what they want. I doubt it's going to be that way, knowing the grants. But our office will be prepared to work with human service organizations and legislators to come up with the initial amount of money so that we can start getting reimbursements.
So, Barb, you're saying the state is going to pass a law requiring counties to pass it, not just why don't they just pass it? A statewide law.
No, they are. I'm sorry.
I'm not asking each county to pass.
No. I didn't mean to confuse you. Oh, okay. They will include it in the plastic ban law. They'll modify it.
Okay. I've got Anna Leslin Henry.
I was just curious, Amanda, what you were talking about, getting them the bags, which is awesome, from like stores and have you guys talked about also maybe a collection from individuals, like a place where, you know, like right now there's a plastic bag recycling drop off, a renewable bag drop off for all those people who forget their bag and they end up with like 25 bags and they're sitting in their car and they're right?
Like me?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great idea. I think it may have passed through our conversation. Just to be a question of where would that be, and you know,
I'm just planting a seed.
Yeah,
because I have a few I can give.
I know, right? A lot of people have tons, so yeah.
Leslin. Okay, Henry.
I was wondering who's going to, when the state reimburses us for the money, who's going to accept the money, and then how is it going to be used to pay for the bags for people who are of low assistance?
I'm assuming it's going to be the finance department here, and if our department funds the bags, we will see that money come back to us, but Jason might have a different thought.
Sounds good to me, Barb.
Okay.
I think you just volunteered.
Sounds good.
Well, I mean, it's really easy and reasonable to do it that way.
I'm sure the check will be cut to the finance department, and then we'll go from there. Yeah.
Okay. Do you know whether the other three counties that have already done it other three have already done it? Ulster and Niagara and
well, I'm actually going to look into that.
Okay.
But I figure that, you know, let's see if this passes and then we'll go from there.
Okay. Henry, I got you right.
Yep.
That was Mike's. Deborah, you're trying to look like you want to answer something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that it was my understanding that this 5-cent fee couldn't go into effect until next March when the ban goes into effect statewide. So we're not going to have anybody else's experience to go by.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to actually have to get going before, you know, we have to be prepared for March, yeah.
Okay. Mike Sigler, Shauna. Annie again, I think. Okay, Mike.
I'll try and be quick. I'm amazed that we're kind of back here, to be honest. Literally said the paper bags were as bad as plastic bags. Some people took that. Deborah, she went to NYSA. Yeah, Sigler has a point. I remember that. Other people
said,
nah.
You have two, actually, Mike.
What?
You have two, actually.
Other people said, nah. That's nothing, Sigler. I don't even know what you're talking about. And I'm like, all right. I appreciate. This is what I don't think the 2 cents should go to what you guys are suggesting. Because frankly, I don't want this to become I show up at the store and somebody gives me a reusable bag every time I go shopping at the store. And then we've got all these reusable bags out there.
You have to buy it.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. Listen, I think I made the point that paper bags were pretty bad. I still think single use is better than what you've got going. One thing I know, cloth bags are horrific. Don't use those unless it's recycled cloth. Okay?
They're not good. They don't last.
Right. Don't last. They take a ridiculous carbon footprint on those. Even the recycled plastic bags, you've got to use them over 100 times to equal a single-use, quote-unquote, plastic bag. So use them at least 100 times and we'll be okay. You know, the paper bags, they're going to go to the landfill. I'm going to vote for this 5 cents because, frankly, this is not a big issue to anybody. Nobody's coming to my door saying, "Man, that 5 cent plastic paper bag fee, that is the worst thing ever." I'd like to know what Target's going to say because there seem to be the biggest plastic bag use around. So they'll probably make their plastic bag a little bit thicker and then they'll just use the plastic bags. I hope they don't do that, but we'll see. Anyway, I don't think I could have done much more than I did before to kind of alert everybody to this problem. So 5 cents, people are going to go. Frankly, I go to Wegmans now and I checked this out the other day. About half the people are using plastic bags or paper bags. I don't know if you're going to stop them from doing that. Because people go to the store and they don't bring their bags. You try to tell people, you want them to do that, and they don't. So they use the paper bags. Like I said, about 50%. But again, and the studies show too, when people do the reusable bags, they'll use them like 3 or 4 times, and then they'll go buy another one. I don't know. Anyway, so, yeah, well, let's pass the 5 cent fee. I don't know. I would like to see the state take that 5 cents and actually put it towards something environmental. Like, I don't know, let's plant some trees. I would like to see them do that. Well, hopefully that's
3 cents out of every 5.
Yes, and the lottery money is supposed to go to education. But, that's where we are. So
I'm sorry you didn't bring your stack of paper bags.
I try not to be a negative Nelly, but there you go.
Mike, I have never bought a cloth bag, and I must have 20 in my house or a car, and I don't know where they come from, and they never wear out, so they're better than my jeans. So, Shauna, and then I think Annie had your hand up again.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. Shauna.
I was just wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the enforcement mechanism that we're going to have here.
The state does the enforcement.
Okay. So will there actually be an enforcement mechanism on this local law?
No. The state does the enforcement. Under the law, it gives the authority of the state to enforce it. And given that they're collecting it and we're only getting what, sort of like sales tax in essence, that, they collect it and then we get it, they're really the ones in the better position to enforce it. But that's the law anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
Annie?
Thank you for letting me speak again on this. Just a couple quick comments. I've actually had some of my bags so long, they have slightly worn out, so I have duct tape on some, and then I kind of wonder, well, what's the environmental impact of putting the duct tape on there? And there are other containers. A lot of people talk about bags, but sometimes I've stacked different size cardboard boxes in my trunk and take them out. Green Star has a place in the front of their store where there's almost always boxes, and they put them there in the front. And so if you didn't bring a bag or you need something extra, another container, because I don't know if you're like me, I'll bring in a reusable bag or two, and then I sometimes get more things than will fill up my bag. So they have and they used to have the bags there that Anna's suggesting, as far as you could turn in your extra bag. So I would like to see that in stores for folks. So maybe that's something that those people that are working on that can consider that. And Green Star has been doing for quite a while that if you bring your own bag, you get a little token that's worth 5 cents, and you put it into one of three different organizations' bins, and you're actually giving 5 cents, or the store is giving 5 cents to various local nonprofit organizations. So that's kind of an incentive for people, and I see a lot of people bring their kids in there, and they give the kids the tokens, and the kids get to decide where that 5 cents goes. So I'm hoping people can continue to be creative about this. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mike, I think it's really about behavior change, and I think it works. You know, they'll take a little. We used to throw everything out. Now we wouldn't think of not, we would always recycle the things that work, and sometimes the things that can't be recycled too. But no, it's a behavior change, and I think it's time has come. So maybe the time has come to vote. Is there anybody else? Mike Lane.
I just have a question. What are we going to tell folks to do with their animal waste that they put in the garbage? Do we want them to put that in a lot of them put it in plastic bags, kitty litter, other kinds of things like that.
Amanda?
What do we recommend to our constituents?
Pretty much everything you buy at the grocery store comes in a plastic bag. Your bread bag, your cereal bag, your whatever kind of bag. This is literally just the checkout bags. So your produce bag, your whatever, like everything comes in plastic. So I would recommend that people go through the rest of their garbage and use a different kind of plastic bag or a cardboard box, or take it and, you know, if you live in the country, compost it, you know.
So you want to recycle cardboard.
Well, you can recycle the cardboard, but there's plenty of lots and lots of plastic out there.
And there's also combustible doggy bags, too.
Right, right. Yeah, absolutely. And life is going to be different. Change is important. Anna?
Yeah, thank you, Martha. I was just going to say that. And thank you, Amanda. I had cats for decades, and I always used exactly like Amanda said, the bread bags. It is, they're plastic, they're a bag. It's purely a mental mindset, and honestly, the whole argument about what are we going to do about cat litter has been the perennial argument for like 15 years and 20 years. I think that it's time to put that argument to rest. I think we're smart enough to get creative about using bread bags instead.
Leslie?
Thank you. I appreciate all the conversation around the table, but I don't want us to get flip with understanding that there's an economic impact for folks. So, yes, they're compostable doggy bags, but they're expensive. Just like when you go buy the organic stuff that you're supposed to be good for you, that it's 4 times more than the other stuff. Not everybody can afford those things. So please let's not be flip about, you know, about what it would be like for certain folks who are not going to be able to afford some of this as we think of solutions to help folks like that. That's my only thing. Yes, there are going to be changes. It's a change in mindset. It's a different something. But understand as well, or acknowledge as well, that this will be a severe economic impact on some folks.
Okay, that is true. Are we ready to vote? All in favor of Resolution S, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very, very much. Thank you, Ann. Thank you, CCE, whoever came, Hannah. Thank you very much. And so that we can send Ken Clark home. Anna, do you want? Shauna, do you want to take Resolution P?
Yes, I would like to move Resolution P, adoption of local law, number blank of 2019, a local law amending the Tompkins County Charter, Article 26, Office of Human Rights, Human Rights Commission, ID 8969.
And seconded by Mike Lane. Discussion? I want to thank the folks who worked very hard on this, and I'm sure I'm not going to name the right ones. Shauna, maybe you have the name, you know, who exactly worked on revising the...
Nope.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
There was a subgroup of the Human Rights Commission that provided some feedback. I know Jonathan spent a lot of time on it. So there's a lot of people that provide some input.
Okay. Sorry to put anybody on the spot here, but gratitude to those folks. Sean, did you want to say something else?
Yeah, I also wanted to thank everyone that worked on it. I know that the commission worked hard on making some of the changes and suggesting. I also want to thank Amy Hendricks and Jace Molino for meeting, as well as Jonathan Wood for meeting with the smaller subcommittee. And I think we have a really good product here. So thank you, Henry, also for being the liaison for the commission. I look forward to moving forward with this charter.
All right. Any other discussion? All in favor of Resolution P, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Mike, did I see your hand?
I was in favor. Sorry.
Okay. That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Terrific. And Reverend Clark, before you go, Jason, do you want to mention the Dorothy Cotton Institute dinner?
Absolutely. I did send a notice out to everyone, but if you haven't seen it yet, Office of Human Rights is willing to sponsor a table or two for legislators and human rights commissioners if you're interested in going to the Dorothy Cotton Institute annual gala, December 5th. I believe that's a Thursday. Mm-hmm. If so, shoot an email to Ken between now and the end of the week, and we'll be sure to make sure you have a spot.
Yeah. Thank you, Jason. All right. So I think we're back to legislative privilege of the floor. Anna.
So this weekend I had the privilege of working with an organizing committee to do the annual local progress conference convening. There were about 75 people from New York State. And we had representatives also who were speakers from Milwaukee, from Baltimore, from California. It was, just wanted to take a moment, humor me, it was by far the most profound, amazing, heart-filling, rejuvenatory experiences in politics I have ever had. And I just wanted to share a few things. If you can imagine, 75 legislators, all earnest, passionate about being not just electeds, but being public servants, articulate, and focused on collaborative governance. That was sort of the cornerstone of the work that we did. The first day, which was Friday, we had a progressive governance academy teaching about collaborative governance and what that really looks like, talking about the barriers to that, which I think a lot of us, every legislator, knows the experience on a day-to-day basis. But then we got heavily into policy, you know, from where to go now with the immigrant rights, what's happening at the state, what can happen at local levels, what needs to happen in communities to protect immigrants, how to help them integrate into systems, how to fund programs, from clean water and air legislation at the county, at the state level, things that we can pass locally, reforming police relationships with the public, and on and on and on. The thing that's most amazing about this conference is the sharing of work. You know, people sharing left and right, hey, I had this experience, here's this legislation. I called Jay in the middle of the weekend, thank you, Jay, by the way, to get the legislation that we passed for reducing the assessed value on land trust. And there were 15 people who are clamoring to get that, who want to pass that in their county. So I just want to know that you all to know that we're having an impact, that some of the stuff that we're doing is going to be passed in other counties. And hopefully I will be bringing some of that here. So it's every year, and I would love for some of you guys to join. It gets better and better every year, but this year was very powerful. I'll just end on the note that this group is also not afraid to talk about issues that make people uncomfortable the last day on Sunday. We all sat around, created a safe space, and talked about the Me Too movement, not only about personal experiences people have had, but what we want to do as elected officials, how we want to be allies to survivors, not just women, just survivors who've been victimized of sexual harassment,
And it was a very powerful, powerful experience. There are definitely people who have had personal experience, and then there's some people who consider themselves maybe very progressive and didn't realize how much they had to learn about everyday experiences that some of us have. So hope you'll join me next year. I'll certainly let you all know when it's coming up, and you'll see the legislation probably coming up over the next year. So thanks.
Thank you, Anna. Deborah?
So on a completely different note, I went to the ITCTC Joint Policy and Planning Committee meeting this morning at Mike's request because he couldn't be there. And he asked me to share some of the information that I learned at the meeting. So here goes. The long-range transportation plan 2040 is in final draft form. It will probably be approved by the committees in December. It can be viewed on the ITCTC's website if you are so inclined. The state's TIP came out last month and is being reviewed to make sure that all of our projects from our TIP are properly included. The interesting thing, at least from my perspective, is the ITCTC had done a study, which is also available on their website, to track commuting behavior among and between the 23 census tracts in our county. And needless to say, there are an astronomical number of people who drive into work in the city alone from out of the city, which certainly has implications for our policies on affordable housing in the city. 50% of the people who work in the city drive alone to get to work. And of that 50%, fully 90% of them live and commute from outside the city. And, of course, some of those are from outside the county as well. There were very similar statistics for Cornell's employees. And I learned, somewhat to my surprise, that about a third of Cornell's employees live outside Tompkins County. So we've got a lot of work to do in terms of planning for how to serve those people and how to get them out of their cars. Finally, and this will be of interest primarily to Mr. Sigler, state DOT is continuing to make spot repairs to the bridge on Route 34 that crosses Salmon Creek just north of the Lansing schools. It was actually pretty funny. The DOT representative said, you know, that bridge is one of the worst ones in the state system. And there's a gal who works for the ITCTC that has to drive across that bridge to and from work. And she kind of blanched. And he said, oh, no, no, it's safe. It's just bad. but in any event, it will probably be another 2 or 3 years before they actually get around to replacing that bridge. They're going to have to close it down entirely because they can't replace the steel arch any other way. And apparently they're doing some repairs through Ludlowville so that we will have a viable detour to get around the construction. So
she should telecommute from now.
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, that's all I got.
Thank you, Deborah. Anybody else? Rich and then Mike Lane.
I just wanted to report Judge Miller at City Court had invited legislators if they wanted to visit the Ithaca Wellness and Recovery Court, and I went yesterday, was one of their hearings, and got to watch how the court operates. As you may recall, we did some work last year to get special funding for a coordinator position so this court could become operational in 2019, and it was really heartening to see how this court is working. It is a situation where these people would probably be in our jail, several of them, if they weren't diverted into this court system. And when you sit there and you listen to the stories of where they're at and what they're going through, these are people that are struggling with some mental health issues. Jail is not the right place for them. And as we've talked about, we are seeing some real success in keeping our jail population at a low level. This is one of the programs that's helping that happen, but it's also making a tremendous difference in the lives of these people, to the positive. So I just wanted to commend all of you for our vote on helping to get this started. And I also talked to Judge Miller, and he indicated it seems to be on track that after 1 year of operation, the state will allow it to operate on a countywide basis rather than city residents. And it looks on track to do that. And that should occur around May.
That's good news. Thank you, Rich. Mike Lane and then Leslin.
Some of you may recall that we've been talking about what's going to happen when we get to redistricting of the county legislative seats. We've been talking about that in government operations. We've had looked at different kinds of options. The problem, of course, is with the new census, we will probably see changes in some of the populations across our districts. We were thinking about what it might take to minimize the amount of time that we would be serving in districts that are not equal because we had redistricted. Last time we had a census in 2010, we had almost a year in which to put together an independent committee. We call it independent, as independent as we possibly could, and for that committee to work and make recommendations to us about changing the lines, the numbers of various municipalities that would be parts of the different legislative districts, the number in the city versus the number outside the city, all of those things, and the number of legislators. We actually went down a legislator from previously from 15 to 14. We were looking at it, and Jonathan Wood told us it was pretty late in the process to get anything on the ballot for the voters to approve for this past November election. And while I'm sorry about that, we do have one more chance, and that would be next year's election. A couple of other counties took the initiative and got it on the 2019 ballot, and they were reported. I just want to mention them. In Cortland County, there, by a vote of 3,021 to 2,207, they voted to increase the length of their terms from 2 to 4 years. And interestingly enough, it applies to the ones that were elected at the same time. So the people who were elected this time to the Cortland County legislature will serve 4-year terms rather than 2 as they always have in the past. And the other county which was very interesting was Cayuga County, which by a huge vote, 11,762 to 341, voted to do three things: to reduce the number of years in legislators' terms to 2 from 4 in 2022, beginning to accommodate redistricting based on the 2020 federal census, and to set a 3-4-year term limit for legislators. And the other thing would also eliminate the staggering of elections for the districts and allow the legislature to change the number of districts if the census calls for change. So other counties adjacent to us have already started processes to change what's going to be needed on account of the census, and I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention. Government operations will continue to look at this and will likely to bring to you in the future recommendations.
Mike, so you mean in Cortland County they voted to increase their own terms?
Yes.
I thought we heard that wasn't,
I thought that wasn't legal.
I can't defend it. I'm not part of that county, but this is what apparently happened over there.
I mean, I know one of the things we've talked about, I mean, it's been informal, but with the problem of the census, I thought we were not actually able to just extend our terms another year just to cover it.
Which would be the easiest and most practical. Yeah.
Which would be, Jonathan, a homework?
I will look into what Portland did and report back at the next meeting.
Thank you.
I mean, that's, you gave us that article, and I mean, honestly, I missed that part. So thank you, Mike.
Well, actually, I was told that specifically by one of the county legislators who had been reelected.
Yeah, I mean, that is what it says. I didn't realize that that's what that meant. Okay, thank you very much. Now I lost track. Leslyn, did you have your hand up? Okay, go ahead.
Well, I thought I was bringing some lightheartedness, but might pitch it to us. Anyhow, I just want to give a big old shout out to the Ithaca College football team. Yeah, this quarter got drunk. Bringing home that trophy. The 61st Cortica Jug. I've been in a real somber mood for the last 3 weeks to try to eat some of it. I tried to sneak into the game, but it was all so loud. It didn't work out. I tried to climb the fence. It didn't happen. Anyhow, more importantly, I want to highlight all of the student athletes are wonderful, but I want to take this opportunity, because he is a constituent of mine, to give a big old shout out to a young man named Kyrie Brown. He's a defensive back on that team who does a lot of work. And the reason why I mention Kyrie is because not many years ago, just a few years ago, Kyrie was one of two young men in our community. He grew up at GX, so we're very proud of them. Yay, GXers. Some of you might remember the story, who had guns drawn on them by one of our local officers. Turned into a really big issue in this community. This young man has always been relatively upstanding. His mama don't play. Led to a lot of the trainings around implicit bias. These were two young black males who grew up in our community who were strong, positive role models. Kyrie is at Ithaca College, knew that's where he wanted to go. You know, studying health science and medicine and human performance, wants to be in the medical field, and was actually, I think, coming home from a football fundraiser when this happened. So, you know, pointing out lightheartedness and just saying yay to Ithaca College for bringing home the trophy, but also reminding all of us that this young life of this young man who is so amazingly talented could have been cut short just because of some of the decisions that get made when we don't take time to engage and learn and connect with each other. Mistakes were made. Conversation has been happening. Training has been happening. And I hope that we continue to go in that direction, both for law enforcement and understanding the work they do and how dangerous and threatening it is for some of them, but also for community members and particularly our young black males. So shout out to Kyrie Brown, shout out to his mom, his grandma, because I know they work hard with him, and continue to be a role model, and shout out to Ithaca College for bringing that trophy home. Y'all know me, I love my sports, I had to go there. So thank you.
Thank you, Leslyn. Ann Corman.
Thank you. So I, as well as Martha and a couple of other legislators, attended an awards ceremony presented from our county sheriff's department, and it was specifically for the corrections officers. And I wanted to congratulate all the officers and staff at the county jail who received certificate of commendations and medals of merit. So thank you.
Thanks, Annie. And I put the program in, a copy of the program in everybody's mailbox. And that was the first time since I've been here that the sheriff has done that. It was great. Yeah. Anyone else? Henry.
Well, I'd also like to thank that Cornell football beat Dartmouth this weekend for the first Woo-hoo! For the first loss of the Dartmouth team, the first time Cornell's beat Dartmouth in 10 tries. I also want to give an announcement about the GEC Harvest Fest that is occurring this Friday, November 22nd.
Leslin's been out of town.
Right. Sorry, Leslin. They'll be hosting an annual Harvest Fest dinner on November 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m. Dinner served until 7:30 at the Beverly J. Martin School. And dinner will consist of turkey and all the trimmings and is free and open to all.
Leslin, thanks you, Henry.
Volunteers. Always need volunteers to help.
All right. Thank you, Henry. Amanda, do you want to mention the poet's reception in January?
Not yet.
Okay. All right.
Stay tuned.
I have a couple of if that's it, anybody else? All right. I have a couple of things. First, I want to thank everybody. I want to say, I was going to name a few people who met with the kids before. We had a visit by Kids Taking Action, a group of, God, it was about 15 or more kids with their parents, ages like 4 or 5 to 12 or so, organized by the Tompkins County Democratic Committee, but open to any, to kid of any political persuasion or none, et cetera. And they came earlier this evening. I was going to say thanks to Jonathan, Deborah, Shauna, Amanda, Anna, and Annie in particular. Did I get everybody? For hosting and talking with the kids, but I think everybody got involved, and that was really fun. So thanks, everybody, for helping to kind of educate the next generation. I warn them that when their high school students are going to be back here again, and that'll be sooner than we think. There is a reception tomorrow night at Cugan Nursing and Rehabilitation Center. I sent you that invitation tomorrow evening, 4 to 7 on Trumansburg Road. This is Cuga Ridge, a nursing home that has gone through a lot and with IDA support has renovated. They've undergone a major renovation. And in particular, the reason I mention is because they are applying for Medicaid-assisted living beds. It is a funding stream through New York State that was specifically voted a year and a half ago for counties like ours that don't have any Medicaid-assisted living beds. And it's not wrong to say, finally, we have a provider who's prepared to put that application in. So that's tomorrow evening. I think it's a very big deal for our community, for folks who need assisted living and are on Medicaid. So appreciate that that's happening. I wanted to urge everybody. I sent out a message on Friday to all employees about United Way. The United Way campaign is very important to our community. Last year, we, as a workforce, we gave something north of $10,000 altogether. Betty Simolo in finance is a dedicated supporter of United Way and helps remind me that we have to do a letter and get that out. And she manages the pledge cards with employees. And thank you, Rick, for her time and her enthusiasm. And she pointed out that she said, well, why don't we make a stretch goal of $15,000? So we put that into the letter. I hope everybody will pitch in something. 100% participation is more important than the dollars that each individual gives, but it really, we work with all of these nonprofits, and I think we know the importance of the United Way. And finally, Jason and Sean and I have been talking about organizing a retreat, department heads and legislator retreat. We have done them, we used to do them at least once a year, sometimes twice a year. Yes, twice a year, Jason. but on particular topics, and we haven't had one in a couple of years. And it seems timely as a way to sort of take stock of you know, sort of big picture items with county government and with the community. So I said I would ask folks for volunteers. We wanted to establish a working group, a department head and legislator committee, to chew this around, try to, you know, come up with what some key questions might be, what topics might be important and fruitful for us. So I would love to have volunteers, and I'll send out a note to you and to department heads to pull together a group in the next week or so. So just heads up for that. Any questions or comments? All right, thank you all. County Administrator's Report, Jason Molino.
Thank you. In front of you, and earlier this week, I sent you a copy of the draft shared services plan with several recommendations. Under the law, the legislative bodies have to have an opportunity to review and provide feedback to this shared services plan. I'll back up a little bit. At the beginning of the year, according to the law, we convened the panel. The panel is the town supervisors, village mayors, city mayor, as well as myself as the chair. Convened a meeting to discuss potential shared service opportunities. Invites were given to all school district superintendents, all labor union representatives in the county as well to participate and provide input and feedback. We had an online process or online form that could be completed with feedback. We used TCOG as kind of one vehicle to use to receive feedback, and generally had meetings following the TCOG meetings to engage with our local representatives. We also had, I believe, three public hearings to receive input and feedback. At this stage of the game, here is the list of shared services that have been flushed out. This was intended to come to the legislature a few weeks in advance, but with the discussion and ultimate adoption of the flood resiliency and climate conservation engineer, I thought it best to hold and then include that in this because it is a shared service. And one of the primary benefits is that municipalities will have access to this engineer to assist and further some of their projects. So including it here seems very reasonable. So that's why you didn't get it until a few weeks after the budget was adopted, so we could incorporate it. I've sent this out to you, and we'll provide you an opportunity, and I can answer any questions you want now. Probably after another week or so, then I would send it out to the panel, and then the panel would have the ability to vote on it, and then assuming it passes, we would then forward it to the state as our plan for next year. I will make several notes of it. I have received some feedback already. In the findings section on the first page, I'll include countywide dispatch as well as TCAT. And then on the last page, specifically pointing out HABs and water quality on the Cayuga Lake watershed section. These are areas to be further developed. But obviously any other feedback you have or any questions you may have, I'd be happy to answer them. I will say, you know, similar to the prior 2 years ago, these are not small, but these aren't huge initiatives that require, you know, significant amount of effort behind them. But these are some initiatives that I think qualify, and we did get favorable feedback, and we are still waiting for the check from the state on the last shared service plan. But I think these are all attainable. One of the nuances of the shared service plan is that it has to be accomplished in a 12-month period of time, which is kind of limited. If you're really going to engage in major, you know, significant change, it takes a much longer period of time to do that. Also, if you don't accomplish it in the year that you identify it, but do it the next year, you can't get credit for it. So there's some nuances that don't always make it easy to do these things, but these, I think, are all attainable, things that are either in the works or that are planned to work out next year. So I'd be happy to go over any of them in any detail that I can or answer any questions anybody has.
Anna.
Just one question. I spoke to you before you created this draft about the possible shared software, the online software that we use for videos with the city and the county. Did that go anywhere? Is that a possibility?
I spoke with chief of staff in the city. It seems to be they have their software that they use. It did not appear that they were interested in changing software at this stage of the game. I believe I talked to Michelle as well about this. The only opportunity it seemed that we might have would be buying power, but that would mean
it would make more sense that there was buying power to all of the municipalities versus just the city. Two municipalities, I don't know, that would capture a lot of benefit out of it. And we have not engaged with the vendor to see if that's of interest to them. I think they've done it in one other community, but you'd have to have all, you know, you have to have more communities to want to change over to the Minitrack system.
Okay.
But we did follow up on it after our conversation.
Anything else? Thanks very much, Jason. And Ms. Clark, I just want to say welcome to the meeting. In case you're here for the paper bag fee vote, we already passed it before you got here. Okay. I don't mean to kick you up. I also didn't want you to, like, wait 2 hours and, like, wait a minute, what happened? So, okay.
So
all right.
I will leave this, and probably will not send it out to the panel till next week. So if there are any other concerns, questions, feedback you have, feel free to shoot me an email or give me a call. I'll be able to talk to you about it.
Thank you, Jason. Thank Jonathan Wood, county attorney.
Okay. Well, I have
drum roll, folks.
So I have two things. So no report today. One of which I'll ask for this screen to come down for, but I'll start with the other one.
For heaven's help.
Yeah. So the first thing is an update on the opioids litigation. As you may recall, I reported at the last meeting, or maybe the one before, that there was a national group of all municipalities in a federal cause of action, and we had the opportunity as a municipality to opt in or to opt out. Yeah, actually, you opt out. If you don't opt out, you're automatically in. And I think when I first reported it, we were waiting for the recommendation of our council, and our council, as well as the council to all other municipalities in New York State, recommended that we opt out. So I filled out the paperwork to opt out, and tomorrow was the day that municipalities had to opt out. Today there was a meeting sponsored by NYSAC, which every county or county attorney participated in. And immediately before the meeting, the two councils that represent virtually all the municipalities in, or certainly all the counties in New York State, sent out an email with a memo saying they changed their mind and that we should opt in. So after this conversation, during which they went through every single county from Albany to, I forget what, Yates, during which everyone had the opportunity to question, I and pretty much every other county changed from opting out to opting in. The reasoning is somewhat difficult to perhaps explain. Is originally they thought that we would get a better deal by opting out, but now they think that their understanding is that we can basically do both, get whatever deal we can in our litigation as well as participate without any harm. So that came as quite a surprise to every county and was last minute, to say the least, and opposite of what I reported last time. So everything I reported last time, ignore it, was all wrong. And we are opting, or we are not opting out. We are going to be a participant in that settlement negotiations with the company, as well as continue on our New York case. If there are any questions about that, I'm not sure I have more to say other than, like I think I said to begin with, it's a confusing issue. I wasn't sure what they were going to recommend, and I guess they weren't either.
I'm glad you went to the meeting. I'm glad you participated in the meeting.
Yeah. So if we can take a minute, I handed out this hydro report, and I had mentioned I'll wait a sec while this...
my part to see. Is this on a PowerPoint or is this just... No, it's just the one slide. Okay. So I hope everybody can see that pretty well. I also handed out a copy. As you may recall, about a year ago, I gave a report on how the Waterloo Hydro Plant was doing, both in terms of its production of electricity as well as financially. And I said I would report periodically with the intent that I would come back annually when we got the numbers and report on how things are going. So with that understood, I want to kind of go through the columns and explain what everything is and then kind of explain what I think it all means. So if you look at, like, in the taking just the first month, which is July, because this is running from July through June, because last time I reported through July. The first number is the number of megawatt hours that the facility produced, which is 167 for that month, or 167,000 kilowatts. I tend to think in terms of kilowatts. The rate in the next number is the rate that we are paying to gravity to produce this energy. I think of it as 10 cents a kilowatt hour. It's put here as $100 per megawatt hour. The next line is the amount of payment that we made for that month. And, of course, it goes across each month. And the next number is the credit that we got back under the rules. And we actually get that as a credit on our bill. So in this case, in the July, we paid $100 and we got a credit of $107.55. So we made money for every megawatt, about 7%. But if you look across, that was our best month during the time. And the credit that we got varied from that $107 all the way down to $80 in May, which is the second to last month, meaning that we were paying $100 and getting a credit of $80. And we knew there'd be variation when we did these things. We discussed that. The amount of variation had actually been greater than we had anticipated. The next line going down would be the amount of revenue that we got, given the number, the amount of electricity we produced times the credit rate that we got. So that would be the amount of credit on our bills. Now, understand we have like 30 bills, so it's complicated. This is a total amassing it, which takes some time to do. And then the final line is the amount that we gained or lost for that month. So reading across, it has some pretty significant things happened. The most important thing is actually that first line. So when we had originally made this contract, we figured the average production or the normal production would be about 4.3 million kilowatts a year. And the county in this past year and during this period of time used 6.1 million kilowatts of a year during this period of time this year. The amount that we produced at this facility was over 7 million kilowatts, which is way more than anything we'd ever thought we'd produce. And there are several reasons for that. One of which, it's just been a very wet year. That's probably the biggest factor. But also, I mean, and what we were hoping to accomplish, I think have accomplished, is the facility is much more efficient at producing power, and that was one of the reasons to go into this thing, because we could produce electricity more effectively. And as all of you who went there to the facility, they had just installed that new rake outside there, which basically rakes out contaminants and things which would slow down the flow of water. And that has been amazingly effective and has increased power dramatically. So from an environmental point of view, we are producing, or this year, I doubt we'll have many years that are this good. We produced over 7 million kilowatts of electricity, which from an environmental point of view is just, you know, phenomenally better than anything we ever thought we would do.
And you said we used 6.1 million?
Right. So it's we produced 15% more than we used. So credits roll over, they keep going. So in other years, and we never expected to produce as much as we use, never mind more. But that's what's happened. I think for environmentally, that's a great thing. Thing which was less or more interesting is that the credits varied greatly. And for the last period of time that I gave the report, which was a six-month period of time, because we just started getting the rate a year and a half or so ago, the rate we got back overall exceeded what we were paying. In this year, it was somewhat below. In this period of time. Now, one of the interesting things is that when you produce this much electricity, any variation becomes expanded. It becomes much greater. So if you are over by a little bit, you end up making a lot of money. And if you're under by a little bit, just the opposite, because the more you produce, the greater the variation comes. The line on the bottom, the corner where it says 52,000 $200, that approximates the amount that we lost. But what it's labeled there is the gravity credit to Tompkins County. So basically, the company's going to cover us for that. And in fact, they're going to cover us for more than actually, for more than our imbalance. So they're going to cover us for $52,200. And if you'll go down and you'll look at that $869 there, that's going to give us a profit of $869 for that year period. Because they're committed to making sure that we don't suffer, that we... and also, because they produce so much electricity and we're paying them for it, that they could kind of afford to cover us. So we actually are going to make a few $869 for that period of time. And the bottom line there is for the last 6 months before that, we made about $8,000. So if you add them together, it's $9,550. So over the past year and a half, we've not only generated all this electricity, but we've had income of close to $10,000. So that's the report. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Again, the most interesting thing is that we are producing way more electricity, hydroelectricity, than we ever thought we would. That, I think, is a good thing. Part of it is obviously because of wet weather, but even that is obviously good for the environment in the sense that it was turned into electricity. So that's my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Jonathan. That's great. Really terrific news. Deborah.
So, yeah, this is very interesting, Jonathan, and I appreciate all this information, but I'm having a really hard time understanding how we lost money when we produced way more electricity than we used.
How much you produce relative to how much you use really doesn't have any relationship to how much money you make. It's how much we pay gravity versus how much credit we get under the law, which is it's a remote net metering agreement. So we pay 10 cents and we'll get a credit, which may be 11 cents or maybe 9 cents, depending on the market. So it doesn't really matter how much you produce relative to how much you use. That's sort of irrelevant. It's how much you're paying versus what the credit is.
Okay.
Yeah, the credit is determined by the market, and you never know what it is. And in fact, the way you get the bills, you don't know what it is until sort of like the sales tax, until many months after it's over.
By credit, you mean the rate, that second line.
Yeah, the credit rate. And, but it's actually a credit. You actually get that money on your bills. Okay. But like I say, it's divided up into so many different bills that it's not immediately determinable, you know, at any time. It's not until you could kind of analyze a year where you could kind of get exactly how much credit and what the rates were during various periods of time.
Okay. Is this the first full year we've been on this? I can't remember.
It's a year and a half that time since we were able to, I mean, we were producing electricity before, but before we were able to get fully operational and get the rate that we wanted from NYSEG and the state.
Other questions? Annie and then Mike.
So I'm going to follow up with Deborah's confusion here. And part of what I don't understand is that the $52,000 is on the bottom right is
right.
Something that we owe them. But they're going to credit us, or is that a $32,000 or something?
No. I heard about. So what happened is when they calculated this year how much we paid them versus how much credit we got, okay, we paid them about $51,000 more than the credit we got. So what they said is that they will give us a credit for $52,000 so that we don't end up behind, we actually end up ahead.
And why did we get less credit?
The credit is determined by the market, and you never know what it's going to be. The credit is it accounts for a whole lot of different factors, but it varies. And like I said, in this example, in this year, it went from a high of over 107 to a low of 80. It changes every month depending on market conditions, depending on the weather, depending on demand, depending on. So it's an unknown.
Does NYSEG determine that? Who determines that rate?
The rate is determined by NYSEG, or it's given by NYSEG, okay. But it's based on a whole bunch of factors. I mean, they don't just make it up. But they're the ones mm-hmm. that will tell you what the rate is, but it's an unknown rate.
Is it the ISO? Don't they set the rates?
I'm not sure if they set the rates on this. I think they may set the formula,
okay.
But the actual calculation and the numbers, I think we get that with
Mike Lane, then Anna.
Just curious, and you may not know anything about this, but there are two dams, right, at the site?
No, there's one dam at our site. There is another dam that they own, which is some miles away. It's on the same river, and it's going to be used by a different county.
It's that far away.
About maybe 15 miles or so.
I was just wondering how they compared.
I can tell you they compare. I mean, the other one is much larger. We could not use that for remote net metering. It's simply too big.
Okay. Thank you.
Anna? You were next? I didn't write everybody down. That was you? You were next? Okay.
I'm going to follow up on Deborah's and Annie's questions, if you don't mind, one last to try and figure out if I understand it. But the rate for what we pay for the energy is totally separate from what we get for credit, is what you were saying, correct?
Exactly, yes.
And we have an agreement with them to make it neutral so that we're not losing money. I remember when we first signed this, there was like some estimate that it would be about a 10% gain, I think, over time. I can't remember exactly. I'm like pulling from serious memory.
Yeah.
So I'm curious about that. And my other question is, we do produce, I mean, it's related to that. So we do produce a lot. So I don't understand exactly the situation in which they're making enough that they can cover us, but will they cover us indefinitely, or is there a contract up to only a certain period of time?
I'd have to look back. I don't know that the contract requires them to cover us. They just do it.
you know, because they are committed to it being not being a cost to the county. You know, like I said, like, so the top number, the 100, or I think of it as 10 cents a kilowatt hour, that's what we pay them under our contract with them. Under that agreement or and under the law, we get whatever the net metering rate is as a credit on our bill. That's out of their control. We had certainly estimates based on past history, but as you can see, even from here, it'll vary from 107 to 80 within a year. So, you know, there's a lot of fluctuation in that rate, and no one could ever know for sure what it's going to be. And in fact, even months after it happens, we still don't know what it was.
Just hopefully they'll always cover the difference.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, they're pretty committed to us not, you know, to it being profitable for both of us. And, you know, our relationship is good.
Okay. So anything else? Anybody else? So I just want to notice that the top line is how much was produced in each month.
Yes.
So it's just such a big, there's some really big swings. Look at October is 302 and November is more than 1,000. So.
There are huge swings from month to month in both the amount they produce and the rate of credit that you
right.
get.
Right.
So, I mean, each month is a bit of a crapshoot if you want, but overall it comes out pretty well.
Right. So we used 6.1. Did we use, you say it produced more than you expected. Did we use more than
No.
Expected?
I mean, so the 6.1 I just said is our actual use. That's what we actually used during this period of time. That's completely unrelated to this agreement. It just so happens that when we went into this agreement, we thought that we could basically cover about 60% or 65% or so of what we produce, of what we use, because we were thinking to be average about 4 or 5. The average was actually used was 4.3 million kilowatts a year, and we figured that, you know, that would be about 60 something percent of the amount that we actually use, and it turns out at least this year to be 115% of what we actually use.
Okay, so just so I'm maybe veering into Arel's territory, but so we used 6.1. You know, the benefit, financial benefit to us is obviously better if we can not only produce more hydropower, but reduce how much we use. So, but as we electrify, we're going to be using more electricity.
Yes. And that is, from the point of view of this, that's only an advantage because it absolutely ensures that we can use whatever credits we get.
Right. Okay. So the delta here, the 9.9, 900,000 kilowatts went, is it kilowatt hours?
Yeah.
Went into the grid. Right. That's the idea.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you have to.
Right, we're not actually getting the electrons.
Right, so we took off the grid for all the county facilities during this period of time 6.1 million kilowatts, and that facility pushed out into the grid 7 million kilowatts.
Okay, all right. This is really interesting, and as the years go on, it'll be really great to see trend lines on, you know, on usage and on production too. It'd be very
And it actually keeps us looking at our bills a lot more carefully than we had in the past because we're looking at more things.
It's a really good idea. All right. Anything else for Jonathan? Mike Lane.
Really nice report, John. I was thinking the legislature hasn't had a report on mega recently. Maybe the committee has. But I'd be certainly in the future be interested to hear what Mega's been doing lately.
Okay. Be happy to do that.
All right. Thanks very much, Jonathan.
Sure.
Rick Snyder, Finance Director, do you want to put the screens up? Do you want to?
Sure.
Okay. Wait a second, Rick.
I think I can be heard over this because I have no report. Okay. But
we traded places.
Yeah, we traded places. I did want to announce that, as I told you last month, we had filled two positions in the finance department, fairly high-level positions. Employees were promoted upward into those positions. Thus, it opened a vacancy in the mid-level area that's we're now trying to fill, and we will be conducting interviews tomorrow for that position, both internal and external candidates. And then, depending on how that goes, we may have yet another position to fill near the bottom of our status positions. So there are quite a few movements going on at this point in finance, and but we're checking all the blocks and doing it carefully, and I'm really looking forward to having a full staff again by the end of the year. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. I think that was a report. Any questions for Rick? All right. Thank you very much. Are there any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? All right. Rick. Rich.
Before we get to the consent agenda, I know there was a question about the resolution that's on there regarding the bulletproof vests for the Sheriff's Department. And in answer to that question, it is a full replacement of all of the vests. They're all at the five-year period where they should be changed out. And it's roughly $900 to $1,000 a vest, but it needs to be done. That was the answer.
All right. Thank you, Rick. Rich. Rick and Rich, what's going on tonight? All right. If you have anything to pull off the consent agenda, just let me know. Resolution A, Budget Adjustment, Corrections Division, Sheriff's Office, ID 8849. Resolution B, Authorizing Social Services to Accept and Use Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance Grant Funds to Transition to a New Homeless Management Information System. System provider, ID 9011. Resolution C, Budget Adjustment Code Blue, Department of Social Services, ID 9010. Resolution D, 2019 Budget Adjustment Increase for Food Net Meals on Wheels, Office for the Aging, ID 8990. Resolution E, Resolution to Update the Administrative Policy Manual, Policy 0132, designating name of county property and policy, county property and policy 0304, emergency leave sharing program, ID 8998. Resolution F, okay. Resolution G, date of 2020 organizational meeting, ID 8978. Resolution H, designation of news. Okay. Resolution I, correction of errors, ID 8976. Resolution J, increase in hours, senior motor vehicle examiner, county clerk, DMV, ID 8946. Resolution K, increase in hours, senior recording clerk, county clerk, ID 8945. Resolution L, authorizing a public hearing on local law number blank of 2019, repeal of local law number 4 of 2019, a local law overriding the tax levy limit for 2020, ID 9005. Resolution M, implementation of the 2020 budget departmental fees, ID 9004. Resolution N, authorizing 2020 payments for Tompkins Cortland Community College operating budget, ID 8991. And to appoint Martha Preston to the Board of Assessment Review. Mike?
Martha, I think I probably should have pulled E, because we want to make a small change in the title there.
Okay. All right. You got that? All right. Taking out E, F, and H is our motion for the consent agenda. Moved by Deborah, second by Shauna. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Downtown Facilities Committee, Rich John, Vice Chair. Surprise, Rich.
I am surprised. The committee has not met. I have no report.
Okay. Good standing in, Rich. That's great.
Do my best.
All right. Now go to Public Safety, Rich John, Chair.
Thank you. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting this Thursday here at 3:30. We have several things on the agenda, nothing very, very large. We're certainly going to hear about the upcoming changes to the bail and discovery laws for criminal justice reform. And we are also going to talk about school bus red light cameras and get a report on that. So,
thank you, Rich. I have a question for maybe for Jason. I don't know if we have any new news about the Commission of Corrections and the boarding in question.
We do. I can talk about it. I know, Rich.
Go ahead, Jason.
The sheriff is going back and forth right now with the commission about approval or why they're not necessarily allowing the boarding in of inmates, and there isn't a clear answer as to why. They're citing concerns about the jail meeting exceeding 80% of its capacity, and they're citing that is a concern that they do not want to see the jail exceed 80% of its capacity, therefore they are going board in by board in. It seems to be sketchy at best in terms of the reasoning why. I don't know that, and Derek's been going back and forth with commission to try to get some better explanation, but that's to the extent that he shared with us the string of communication he's had with them, and it's not really clear 100% as to why this is now becoming an issue. Does that sound about right?
Yes.
Do you know whether other counties are in the same boat?
I don't think we know that. We're trying to get some more answers on it.
And this is new, isn't it?
Yeah. We haven't been in the position to deal with board ins in recent history, so that is new. This issue of restricting it based on capacity is something we haven't faced, and I don't know that we have a great understanding as to if it's being applied across the spectrum of jails. I don't, I know some of the larger jails like Broome County probably. They have a lot of vacant beds, so to speak. So I don't think they've ever gotten close to the 80% capacity mark. But we don't know if it's just being applied to us or across the board.
Mike.
Yeah. But like over the summer, we've been boarding some in, and they've got to approve them.
Yeah.
So now they've changed what they've been approving. Is that the idea?
Unfortunately, we don't have a real good reason as to why.
Yeah, I understand the reason, but it is a different. Than what they've been doing.
Yes, it appears to be. Yeah.
And I would just add, there's a distinction apparently between a board in for an overcrowding situation or a safety issue. And overcrowding, they are not letting us do, but they are allowing Tompkins County to take board ins on safety issues. Say, for example, if a jail had two individuals in the jail who had been involved in the same crime, maybe one wanted to hurt the other, you can move one for safety reasons. And so they're allowing that. So it's not clear that. Anyway, we are trying to get to the bottom of it because there. For those watching at home, one of the impacts of having a very small jail population is we have the opportunity to generate revenue, and we can use this money for other purposes. Obviously, it's good for us to be taking board ins when we have so much room in our jail. So we will try to find out why this is.
The budget amendment as a part of the consent agenda is basically using the board in revenue from this past year to purchase body armor for correction officers.
I would just say for me, part of it is not just money issue to make money, because it feels really weird to make money off of people that way. But also, I'd rather them be housed here than like two or three or four counties away from where they live. And I think that having more flexibility that way allows that. So it's very frustrating. But Rich, I was curious. You said they were allowing for board-ins for safety but not for overcrowding, but I thought that they were allowing for overcrowding on a case-by-case basis, but it had to be approved by the state every single time, and that was burdensome. Is that true?
Well, I don't believe they've approved any. So the net effect is...
We've sent some forward. They just haven't approved any.
Right. Again, the discussion is going on. This is, I certainly agree with you that I'm proud of the way we operate our jail, and I think it's a safe place for people to come to, whether they're here in Tompkins or from a neighboring county. the limiting the amount of travel an inmate has to do to move away from where their home is, it's a good thing if we can take board-ins from adjacent counties.
One of the things, though, that you said, have we, and maybe Jason can answer this, have we given a trend line to the state? I feel like COC is still thinking that they know who we are from, like, 3 years ago.
They get all that. I mean, that's all reported to the state, so they understand our jail population on a daily basis. So, unfortunately, I don't know that we have any answers for you as to why. I think the sheriff has expressed his frustration in trying to get answers, so I know he's continuing to work on it. And if we get more clarity, by all means, we'll forward it to the legislature so you're aware of it.
Thank you. Yeah.
We may have some further report on public safety this week.
That's right. Yeah.
I've got Mike Sigler and then Mike Lane.
Well, I was just wondering if that should be a larger policy discussion. I mean, should we take board-outs?
Board-ins.
Board-ins. Board-ins. Well, board-outs from other counties.
Right. Yeah,
should we take those? I guess it depends on how you...
We can certainly have that discussion. Yeah.
That was it.
Okay. Mike Lane?
I thought it was interesting to hear that they would take safety issues and not the overcrowding issues, because when we were boarding out, the other jails would cherry pick. If we had a difficult prisoner, they didn't want that prisoner. But now it sounds like they're saying that if we've got a difficult prisoner, they want us to take it. So I just point that out.
It almost sounds like we're being punished.
I wouldn't jump to that conclusion yet. But it is possible that there. We just don't know.
So I want to say that. So I just looked up. It's a new chairman. I guess I haven't paid attention for a while, but we knew the prior chairman. He would come to NYSEC every conference and sit and talk with folks, and we were able to work with him really well. The issue that if we can board them in because of a safety issue, let's say in Cortland, but not an overcrowding issue in Cortland, then that doesn't have anything to do with our conditions or our population or our 80%. It only has to do with the county that sends them.
It only has to do with your available capacity. So while it may not be your... it has to do with your total available capacity. So if you're boarding in, your available capacity then shrinks, and therefore you could be exceeding the 80% occupancy.
Of course, but we could. That capacity is affected whether the sending county is sending them for safety reasons or overcrowding reasons. It doesn't matter. You're still looking when you're on the Tompkins end. It's still the same number of people, regardless of the reason they came. I mean, and are they saying that, last I looked, we had like 50 in the jail. And let's say 80% of our capacity is 62. I can't remember if that's right. Let's say. So if we had 63, and we had to board out, but we were good until we get to, up to 62, we're okay. So let's say right now we have 50 of our own, and we could bring 12 in. We're not exceeding 80%. I mean, math is math.
Yeah, I don't have an answer for it. Sorry.
Okay.
Hopefully the sheriff will have some more public safety.
It'd be great to check with other counties, because if this is a statewide policy issue, we really need to get on it.
I think that's something our sheriff is doing. He's communicating with some of our neighbors.
Great. Thanks very much, Rich and Jason. I appreciate your looking into that. Any other questions for Rich? Okay. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Hi there. Thank you. We met Thursday, November 14th, and had a presentation by our county administrator and Amy Hendricks. We were also joined by the Board of Health and the Community Services Mental Health Board and the members of the task force. The presentation went over some of the research that was put into place regarding the merger of our public health department and our mental health department. And We were presented with a resolution. However, we brought that on the floor. We had some discussion on that. And we, our next meeting will be Friday, December 6th. At 9 a.m. here in the chambers, and we will talk more about the resolution and probably vote on it then. In the meantime, December 2nd, legislature meeting, Jason and Amy will present the same information that was presented at HHS. I do encourage my colleagues to look at the task force report that has been sent to everyone. There's a lot of information there. If you have questions in the meantime, feel free to contact either myself or Jason or Amy. We spent about 6 months doing the research and compiling all the information. So there is a lot of great information there. Again, if you have questions, feel free to reach out. I do have one resolution this evening. And that is resolution number O. I would like to move appropriation from contingent fund, medical examiner program, health department, and that's ID 8970.
Second by Anna. Discussion?
So this was a resolution brought forward by Frank. This is to right-size the program. If you'll remember, a year ago, we decided to have a local medical examiner that has an office at Cuga Med. And we have since been doing more testing during the autopsy program process. And we have also been renting a room at the hospital, which costs a little bit more than we had initially intended. So this is a budget adjustment for that.
All right, ready to vote. It's a short form roll call.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, thank you. That's unanimous. Any questions for Shauna? Mike Lane.
I have a question but a comment, and you mentioned the report on the possible consolidation of the two departments. I read it. I thought it was particularly well done. I said this to a couple of people. I thought it was particularly well written, and I hope everyone has a chance to read it. And my compliments to all the folks that worked on it.
Agree, and I really want to recognize the folks who put a lot of tremendous amount of time into the research, and we look forward to hearing from them here on December 3rd. Okay. Thank you, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
F and I met just prior to this meeting to consider Resolution Q, which we passed with one amendment. We changed the title, and it should be the title and the first whereas, changed the name from Boswick Road Roof Replacement Project to Boswick Road Garage Bay Roof Replacement Project. At any rate, I would move that Resolution Q, Award of Contract, Public Works Facility Maintenance, Roof Garage Bay Replacement Project. I don't have an ID number for it, but 9029.
Right. And Carmen seconds. Okay. Everybody has that change in the title. Any discussion? All in favor? Any opposed? That's unanimous.
That's my report.
All right. Thank you very much, Dave. Government Operations Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We have not met since our last meeting. Our next meeting will be December 5th at 1:30. And I have two resolutions because I pulled E. I'd like to move E. All we're doing or suggesting is a small clarification in the name. Kathy, shall I just move it? How would you like me to do this?
I'm not sure what change you're
okay. Let me just,
referring to.
I'm going to read it the way we want it to read. A resolution to update the Administrative Policy Manual, Policy 01-32, naming of county property and primary county property, comma, and policy 03-04, colon, emergency leave sharing program, paren, formerly emergency fringe pool, close paren. And I so move with that small change in the title.
Second by Deborah. That's ID 8998. Thank you, Mike. Any discussion? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you.
And I also have Resolution R, appropriation from contingent fund, terminal pay, information technology services. That's ID 8953, and I so move.
Second by Leslin. Discussion? Short form roll call.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Are there any no's? All right, that's unanimous.
That's all I have.
A couple more. All right, Mike, you got that were pulled F and H.
Oh, sorry about that. F is suspending local advisory boards of assessment review for a 3-year trial period for the 2020, 2021, and 22 assessment review periods, ID 8988, and I so move.
Seconded by Anna. And Mike Sigler, you pulled it?
Yeah, I like the assessment review. I like when people go to the towns and people get to go and complain. And a lot of times nobody shows up, but sometimes people do. And I think it brings us closer to the people, and that's why I like it. So.
Mike Lane.
As you know, for 2019, we suspended these for a year to see how things went. We talked about it in committee. And Jay Franklin spoke with us about it, had no negative comment, a few questions about it, but no one opposing it. And he has recommended what's in this resolution, that we continue the trial for another 3-year period, but not until that time decide whether or not we're going to make it permanent.
If you look at packet page 20 in Jay's memo, he notes that while not a hard cost, the suspension of these boards frees up approximately 109 hours of staff time that can then be dedicated to other work. I would add that, you know, legislators' time and also town officials, because at least in Dryden we used to have at least one town official sit there with us. And it's been at least 5 years since we had anybody come. And I understand what you're saying, Mike. I think the issue is there are a lot of other ways that people come, you know, and get information and grieve their, you know, their assessments, et cetera. So I appreciate the concern, but on balance, you know. So Shauna, Anna, then back to Mike.
I actually am going to vote no on this as well. I did the review in 2018. I did have one constituent come, and I think it's a good practice. And certainly, maybe if it wasn't my constituent, I'd be voting differently.
Anna?
I just wanted to note that I've spoken to constituents, and the general feeling is because the assessor is the one that actually really can do something about it, and they are more trained than we are, they prefer to go to the assessment office instead of us, and they are able to do that on any day. So they've just skipped us, which, you know, I get, and then we'll work things out that way. So just influenced my opinion about this. But there's one correction, just very minor, but in the memo, just for posterity, since it's going in the record, in the last paragraph, it says, I want to increase the suspension for another 3 years. I think he meant to say, I want to extend.
Well, this is Jay's memo. It's not something.
We've corrected memos before written by staff.
Okay.
Since it's going in the record.
I don't think it's an amendment to the resolution, but I have no objection to it.
Does this actually go in the minutes? This doesn't go in the minutes.
Okay. Then it doesn't. It's fine.
All right. Mike Sigler.
No, I just want to say, I get both sides. I just like it. It really is the... I understand what Jay's saying. I respect his opinion, and I think he, you know, all things being equal, he can be just as right as anything. And I like this practice. So, and that's why I'm voting against that. So.
Okay, we ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hands. Opposed? Two opposed. Dave, I didn't see your hand.
Who's up for in favor?
In favor. So that should be, I get 10-2. That passes. All right, thank you all. Mike, you got H.
I wonder why this was pulled. It's the designation of newspaper, ID 8977. I so move.
Seconded by Deborah. Mike Sigler.
I know it's state law. It's a stupid state law. It's something that's outgrown its usefulness. You probably know one guy on your street or woman on your street that's reading that little print that's in the newspaper about what's going on. I assume somebody's paying for those little things, whether it be the developer or us. Somebody's paying for those little ads. It just would seem you could take that money and disseminate the information better so that people would actually see it, as opposed to, oh, really, that person's becoming incorporated? Or, oh, wow, there's a big building going in next to my house? That would have been good to know. So I'm going to vote against it because I would rather advertise in something that's even maybe more local. If we were talking about the Cortland Standard and I lived in Cortland, I'd probably be like, okay, well, at least they're a local paper. I don't even think the Ithaca Journal is a local paper anymore. So I don't know. It just seems to me that this is something that's outlived its usefulness at the town level or the state level. So that's it. I understand why we're voting on it.
Mike is the iconoclast tonight. Okay. Deborah and then Anna.
Well, the Ithaca Journal is no longer a local paper. It's a Gannett reg.
Not even Gannett anymore.
It does. Oh, really? It does a very poor job of covering Ithaca news. I wish there were another option, but the law is pretty clear, and as county legislators, we are obliged to follow it.
Who was that? Was it Anna and then Mike?
Okay. I'm just curious, you guys who are on the committee, it can't be an online, it has to be a print journal, right?
Yeah, and I think that's correct. There just aren't, everybody doesn't have the web. And, the print version is expensive, but it's accessible to anybody, and it's in the libraries, et cetera. Mike Lane.
I guess I'm probably one of the last people in the world to take the Ithaca Journal.
I guess.
I also, in the paper version, let's put it that way. I will say that when we were complaining years ago because the tiny print that you mentioned, Mike, now because they have so few stories, they've enlarged the print of the legal notices. It's pretty big now. It's actually readable if anybody reads it. And, of course, it gets delivered to my house and gets thrown in the snowbank, but that's what happens compared to the, as you mentioned, the Coral Standard, which still behaves like a hometown newspaper. But I did want to point out, in all seriousness, that we began a couple of years ago also advertising public hearings and other things in our weeklies so that hopefully more people will actually see them in the weeklies. The archaic laws that you mentioned, and the one that always comes to mind is the requirement to publish the notices of formation of limited liability companies in two newspapers in the county six times in order to make money for the newspapers, frankly. There's a lot of lobbying that goes on in Albany for things like that.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor of the designation of the newspaper, whether we like it or not. Raise your hand. Any opposed?
No, I'm voting with Mike.
Any opposed? All right, that passes 10-2.
I'll get the shirts, so don't you worry about that.
All right. Mike Lane, anything else?
No.
All right. We were close to maybe pushing through without a recess, but I think...
No. We're so close.
Well, and I want we've got four, five different committee reports to go.
Really quick.
Push on through,
push
Mike.
On. Sure. Come on.
All right. We're going to push... All right, it's up to you, Deborah. You got the next report.
I won't be there. Anna will be chairing the meeting. The only thing of particular moment for me is the resolution that will establish a climate and sustainable energy advisory board, which will be an outgrowth of the energy task force that's expiring at the end of this year.
And that money, that meeting is...
Monday at 1:30.
I will be presenting with Jose Lozano the presentation that I did at NYSAC about the renewable energy innovative technologies that our Ithaca Area Wastewater Treatment Facility is doing. They're super amazing. So that will be a discussion at the end.
Okay. Any questions for Deborah or Anna? All right, thank you very much. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We did meet. We met on November 15th. I'll try to consolidate a lot of this. A lot of it was in resolutions you've already seen here tonight or will be seeing next time. We talked about the direct report process, and you all received the confidential surveys that were done in the 360 review of the two direct reports that we're dealing with this year. We are in the process of setting up an interview time with the committee for those two direct reports, and you will all be invited, just like last time, if you'd like to attend. We'd be more than happy to have you come for that meeting, and you'll all get notice. We're going to try to set it up for the committee itself so we can try to get all of them, if we can, along with you. And then everybody else, we hope as many as possible, can make it. Just to give you a little idea about labor negotiations that have been going on, I'm not going to tell you any details of them, but the last day and a half, a significant number of our administration and human resources people have been dealing, along with some of us legislators, with negotiations for the Deputy Sheriff's Unit and also the Corrections Unit. And I just want to say that they take a lot of time. These are mediation processes, very important. I think in a lot of ways it was very positive. And the one compliment I really want to put out is for our Human Resources Department, which, as you know, has been going through a lot of transition. We have our interim director, Lisa Holmes, there helping us. But the information, the ability to step up when the negotiating team needs it, has been remarkable. And I just want to put out that kudo to the human resources folks. They're really helping in this process. Next month, we're going to start talking about something called retention recruitment and retention. Lesson will be happy about that. I know Lesson couldn't make our meeting. We're sorry you weren't there. But this is something she's been talking about for a long time. And we're going to talk about how we can compare our workforce, perhaps, with other workforces for such things as salaries and benefits and how we recruit to try to get diversity and other kinds of things. We don't know where exactly that's going to go, but we're going to start talking about it. And that's all I have, except our next meeting will be on the it's a whole month away, so
20th?
I'll come up with it.
All right.
December 20th. Thank you.
And you have Resolution T.
Yes. Authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law amending Chapter 133 of the County Code entitled Residency. And I so move.
Seconded by Deborah.
If I speak just for a minute, this is it's come forward because of our recruitment efforts. This has been suggested by our county administrator. We've talked about it. It's different than what we've always felt about things in the past, where people have to people reside, who we try to recruit from. But with the smaller number of applicants that we have, or qualified applicants we have, or the hope to be able to have people who are living outside of Tompkins County, but maybe, for example, deputies in the departments, make them be able to aspire to move up. Jason has brought this to us to change the way we do things. It's not going to be automatic. It's going to require waivers, and it's going to require reports to the legislature about any suggestion of a waiver. And so that's why this is coming forward.
All right, Mike, you, I presume you are moving what's in our packet, but there's a highlighted version with a slight change in our folders?
Correct.
Okay.
I'll move the one in the folder.
In the red folder?
Yep.
Doesn't he have to move what came out of committee?
Well, he already did.
Oh, you're voting. You're moving the public hearing. With this attached. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Jason, do you want to talk to this? Particularly the change?
Mike, I think, summarized it well. I put out an email to the legislature a few days ago explaining a little bit more detail, along with the memo that went to the committee in October. This is not the original. After receiving feedback from the committee, went back, revised to try to address some of the concerns, which I think this hopefully meets with a good compromise. And then the last change in language was about discussing or disclosing the need for a waiver prior to any appointment take place, so everyone's fully aware of it. There's a lot of reasons this issue has come up. I'll say this is never an easy issue to discuss. Elected bodies, I think, always there's always two sides to this story as to why it's good and why it's not. I think from a perspective of trying to spread that net as wide as we can to attract the most candidates we can, this will help in assisting to not deterring candidates from applying for the position or for positions. And this is primarily limited to, you know, you have over 100 public officers in the workforce. Most of them, if not the vast majority of them, already have exceptions to the residency requirement through a variety of different mechanisms, through home rule legislation, through the public officers law, or through a local law that this legislative body has done in prior years. The only ones that remain, for the most part, are department heads. This is non-elected public officers. So what we're asking is the ability to grant a waiver based on need or based on the circumstances for those remaining positions that are subject to the public officers law.
Thank you, Jason. Discussion, Amanda.
Thank you, and yeah, I find this an interesting topic. I just want to say that if we're going to be allowing more people to drive in, we need to provide them with parking.
And good roads.
And bridges.
And electric cars.
Electric cars, bridges.
Leslie.
So I appreciate the you taking the feedback from the committee into consideration from the last meeting. I'm sorry I wasn't at this other meeting. And an attempt at a compromise in terms of the waiver. I know that's something we specifically spoke about. I have some concerns. I don't like not having... This is a legislature policy. This is a legislature decision about having this local law. And I don't like not having the legislature, legislative committee involved in approving the waiver, perhaps another level of understanding. right now it seems like just the county administrator does so and then informs the legislature. I would prefer that there is also some approval from the legislature, not just information. I also wonder what it means, and maybe this is too early in the process, like what would be some of the rationale or criteria that would warrant a waiver over others, and what sort of pushback would that bring if I get, because of whatever my circumstances, you know, are, and Shauna doesn't, although she thinks that her circumstances are just as important, how is that going to be, that kind of conflict going to be mitigated? And would it then open the door for complaints, human rights complaints, EEO complaints, and so on and so forth?
I can offer that any department head position has to be confirmed by the legislature. While an appointment can be made, it has to be confirmed prior to being finalized. So the legislature does have final approval of a department head, which is the primary reason why the notification was worded the way it was prior to appointment, so that if there was objection or concern, obviously the county administrator would not be inclined to appoint the person until that issue is discussed, either with the legislature at all or with the committee at hand. As far as issues of standards, I think you're going to run that risk whenever you hire someone in general. I don't know that I have a good answer for you, Leslyn, as to how to address that, other than when you try to go through a process of hiring department heads, you try to identify the most qualified folks that best meet the needs that you have in that position. You try to maintain it as objective as possible, and there is a level of subjectivity at some times that we have to deal with when we hire try to minimize it the best we can, but there's always a point that can be contested, whether it's not just about residency, it's about hiring in general. I don't know that I can answer that question directly. It's a good point to bring up, and I think it provides this process provides another level of scrutiny before someone fills that role.
All set, Leslie? All right, I got Henry, Anna, Shauna, and Leslyn back.
Yeah, I had some concerns also about the standards, but I was also wondering, would this apply prospectively so that the searches that are out now would not be under this?
It would apply for any position that has not been filled. So any position that is yet to be filled, depending on if this is considered to be adopted and when it would be adopted, then anything following that or any action following that is when it would be applicable. So if the appointment has not been made for any department head positions or any public officer positions prior to this being enacted, then this would be applied moving forward.
Anna.
If you are considering with a particular hire that a waiver is needed for them, they're requesting it, you will explicitly, when you bring forward, because this has never happened before, so it'll be new, when you bring forward, you will explicitly say, FYI, they're requesting a waiver and I would like to grant a waiver. I'm assuming that would then be part of that prior to hiring, prior to us deciding.
Yes, I would envision that this would be a conversation prior to an appointment being made and prior to you voting on a confirmation.
Okay, just so now that that's made explicit.
Right, so now this, we do, you know, those, Jason will make the appointment at a ledge meeting and ask if we want to go into executive session to discuss the candidate, and then we confirm the candidate. And I would remind everybody that there are usually at least two legislators on search committees for these positions, so that's that. So what I believe the new language says is rather than wait for the next legislature meeting where the name would be announced, and confirmation requested, it says you would tell the written notice to the legislature as soon as such waiver is deemed necessary prior to appointments. In other words, like at the point where you've decided that's the person you would like to hire, rather than wait 10 days and whatever, you know, et cetera.
But my question about that was that before you call them and say, we would like to hire you, that you're going to reach out to us and let us know.
Yes.
Just want to make sure that...
Yep. I mean, generally how this process would work is in the interview process, it's going to be a point of discussion with the candidate. They're going to want to know if this is a possibility or not, which is going to say, man, I'm going to be able to say, I don't know that answer. I have to, you know, if this is the top candidate, then we're going to have a discussion with the legislature as to, you know, this is why I would request this waiver for this person.
Okay.
So yes, your timeline of sequence would be
okay.
Correct.
And the other thing, I mean, there's nothing that really can be fixed about this. I just want to communicate on record that this is frustrating to me about it. We talk a lot about climate change and then passing a policy that would allow for more driving and longer driving is just emotionally draining. But I also recognize that we have a tremendous housing crisis. So I know that we've had issues with people who didn't feel like they could find housing in the county. So I will support it, but I just want us to be cognizant of that in any way possible. To have people be able to live as close as possible is a good thing.
There's also, I mean, there's a point of discussion that can happen, you know, as we start talking about, you know, the county being an employer of choice. You know, are there other incentives or other employment, you know, packages or benefits that the county wants to entertain that provides the ability for folks to commute more easily without having impacts on the climate or residency? I mean, there are. You know, your workforce is changing, and it's going to continue to change, and being flexible and nimble with that may open doors to different opportunities, which doesn't necessarily mean to restrict where they live. So, you know, there may be opportunities to how do we, you know, not feel that this is going against the intentions or priorities of the legislature, but there may be other opportunities to enhance employment but not cripple our ability to or hinder our ability to recruit top talent.
Sean and Leslie.
So I was actually very apprehensive about this resolution whenever I first saw the change, or whenever I first saw it. I do appreciate the changes. I feel like there is some compromise. I also am looking forward to some of the department heads that we're hiring, and I realize that the fields are very, very specialized. And Tompkins has 108,000 people, and I'm not sure that we'll be able to find someone for some of these positions. So I think that's definitely one of my concerns. In an ideal world, I would love for every single employee to live in Tompkins County, but I think that's not really the reality. I also think that the concern that I did have is if we allow for these waivers, is that how are department heads that are currently that did in fact have to move to our area, what if for some reason they have to move out of the area? Are we going to allow for a variance or for a waiver for people that are saying, you know what, you allowed for that new person to be hired, but I'm paying three times the rent that I could get in Cortland County, and I can't afford to live here? So I'm just worrying that this is really going to open Pandora's box up.
It's possible. I will tell you that one of the things that we covered, I went to a few sessions in Nashville a few weeks ago, focused around workforce recruitment, retention, engagement. And one of the things that a few communities spoke about in their you know evaluation is senior care, and that we have more employees now taking care of their elderly parents, and that has triggered folks to maternity leave, a flexible scheduling, and also specifically they focused on this is compromising at times residency requirements or forcing them to look at them differently because now employees are saying, you know, rather than moving away from home, they're now moving back home or closer to home because that's where the parents are, mom and dad are, to try to take care of them. And as they were talking about that, we have a few
A few department heads that I've had conversations with that are challenged, you know, dealing with that challenge themselves, and some aren't necessarily close. So I think to answer your question, yes, that is definitely a possibility. It's also a possibility when you face a circumstance like this. You know, you've got a department head that, you know, is seasoned in their work, and their parents are elderly, and they live in Jason County, and they want to be able to move back closer to them. How are we going to allow that flexibility? To say that someone would come in and say, listen, you know, I can move across the county line and pay three times less taxes, sure, that's a possibility as well.
Leslie and then Anna.
Thank you.
I mean Annie. Sorry.
Clearly I'm not a fan of this, and Jason hit the nail on the head for me, and something we talked about in committee, at least something I voice, is I would rather see us put our resources into building the kind of environment that people want to come work for us, regardless of where they live or where they're coming from and willing to move into the county, because we are the employer of choice, to use your words, Jason. Mike is right. You know, we've been banging the gavel for years about recruitment and engagement and retention, and I would just as soon see us put our monies there, because I'm afraid that we are we're opening up a box of conflict that we don't need to be opening up at this point.
Annie?
Thank you. I second what a lot of folks have already said on this about concerns about in any way expanding or increasing the number of people or percentage of people that we have traveling from outside of the county. Environmental reasons are one of them. Diversity issues, I think, are another one. I think we have a more diverse county than some of the contiguous counties, so that for me is an issue. And another big issue for me is for somebody that's in, whether it's a specialized position or in charge of head of a department, is that we're asking them to implement or to guide policies and procedures and services for people that live in this county. And so that if they don't live here, I think there's a greater possibility that they might not be as in touch as they could be if they were living here and shopping here, and if they had children, their kids going to school here. So all of those things here, but I also am cognizant of, you know, we're wanting the best people. So I don't know. I appreciate the compromises that have been made on the policy, and I'd like us to just to keep working on this issue as far as, as Mike Lane said, that we're going to be working on, you know, diversity and other and retention. And if we have, how much we pay people, but there's so many other factors, as people know, of why somebody might choose to come and work here. It's vibrant, diverse, you know, are we doing the best we can? We're doing a lot of things already that are on the cutting edge. And so I would just want to keep all those things in mind and keep trying to think of ideas that are increasing the skills of the people that we already have here in the county, that we already have working for us, maybe to trying to help people if they're considering moving here at some point, is to have a part of a person or a part of, whether it's HR or somebody, that could help them to navigate, to find a place to live or to navigate transportation, so that if we hire somebody that's outside of here, so that that's a more welcoming, way, or trying to figure out some way to welcome them into this community. I know corporations have that they'll help people try to find a place to live, introduce them to the community. So those are just a couple things in my head, so thank you.
All right, I'm going to take a turn then. I've got Deborah, Henry, Rich. She'll have more. And I would remind folks that this is a vote for a public hearing. So, although this is, it's really important to think deeply about. It's a really important and complex issue. And like when we come back to vote for the actual measure, I wouldn't be surprised if we have the same conversation again, because I think this is something that we probably all have. I think we all have at least two minds about. But I want to say, I think this is about families. I mean, this is, honestly, it's not that, you know, we think of a department as a single person. But most of them are in families, and families have kids in schools, and families have partners who work somewhere else. And if we... You know, if we think, well, it's about incentives for the, you know, employment incentives or better salary or whatever, very often those other ties are going to be a dually word, dispositive. I mean, those other ties are going to be more important than anything else that we might be able to offer. I mean, and we want to think we are the best place in the world to live. And, you know, we are, but people have ties in other places. And, you know, 31%, Jason's memo, which I don't have in front of me, but I it was a very good memo. I hope people will read it. I think you said 31% of our employees now live outside the county.
Right.
So this is discriminating against our department heads. We have, I mean, maybe we should we see the rest of our staff any differently? You know, I don't think so. I think that there's a real issue here in the 21st century that you know, a single job, you know, a single wage earner does not drive where a family lives in the same way it used to when only one parent was working. How many people know that Julia Maddock lives in Geneva? I don't know what the waiver was that, you know, when she was hired, but did she serve us any less well because she happened to sleep somewhere else? I don't think so. So I hope people can look carefully and think carefully about this, that we're proud that we are a job magnet. I think I'm proud that we are attractive to people from around, you know, the 15 different counties is where our employees now live, and we, it's worth it to them to schlep in here every day. I agree that we need to try to make transportation as sustainable, as you know, low carbon as possible. That's for every one of our employees, not just for the folks who come in from outside the county. So I hope people will think about that from the point of view of really trying to attract the best possible talent to lead our government, because I think we really need that. Deborah, Henry, and then Rich.
I just wondered exactly how many people would actually be affected by this policy.
About 20 positions.
Out of how many county employees?
750.
Thank you.
I'll add this. There are several things to think about when we talk. I think both can be achieved. I think this residency waiver can be achieved, and I think we can do a better job in future years and future time about interesting, targeted, not necessarily wage-based benefits, but benefits. So, for example, an example of where there's a targeted effort for residency, City of Rochester and a few big employers in Rochester trying to add revitalization and interest in the City of Rochester, provide, you know, substantial grants for down payments of houses in set neighborhoods, like the Triangle neighborhood and certain neighborhoods in Rochester. You know, there are
that is one example where larger employers and actually the city of Rochester provide a collective benefit to employees in either entity to invest in you know, buying property in Rochester. Obviously, the city of Rochester has different issues than the city of Ithaca or Tompkins County, but it's a targeted effort to engage and try to get people to move into that specific area. Those are definitely things that I think can be achieved as well as this that can complement this. So providing options for folks. There's also probably some level, although I don't know that it exists, but it doesn't mean it couldn't, there can also be something similar around EVs and people traveling in. We're talking about getting into demand management, obviously, in the course of the next year, which is part of the energy strategy. I would bet you there are going to be some interesting things that are going to come from that we haven't thought of. So I think both can be achieved through, I think this can also be achieved as well as on new opportunities that we haven't thought of.
Go ahead, Henry.
I know that there was a something in the Sun a couple of months ago that Cornell was looking into providing some kind of housing subsidy. Does anyone know whether that was true or anything happened with that?
Besides the Community Housing Development Fund?
Yeah, they were talking about bringing in employees, giving them a housing subsidy or whatever to... But I talked to Gary Stute, and Gary Stute said, yeah, it was in the paper, but they weren't talking
about
it.
There were some proposals floated as part of David Skorton's $20 million thing, and that was that 12 years ago or something? Yeah, they didn't do it. And actually, one of the things at the time we counseled them about was, well, if you, and this is obviously going to be lower income staff mostly, maybe assistant professors. One of the problems, if you provide mortgage, let's say mortgage assistance to a whole new cohort, then pretty much without adding supply of housing, all you've done is kind of raise the likely price of every house because you're going to have people being able to compete with more dollars, and it was just going to raise the cost basically and not actually solve the shortage of housing shortage problem. So not to say that that's why they went with the housing fund instead, but maybe, I don't know. So I haven't heard of anything like that.
Okay. I'd also like to ask Jason about the show for good cause that Shauna was talking about in terms of that. I'm just wondering, do you imagine that you're going to deny anybody the right to move, a department head to move out of the county? What's going to be the standard for good cause?
I think the senior care is a good cause. I think just to say I want to move out of the county because I have the opportunity to, I think is a tough sell.
So if they just want to, they just basically say, okay, economically it's better for me to live out of county?
I think that's a hard sell for me. I mean, that's why this is not abandoning the residency requirement. It makes it a requirement. It has to, ask for the waiver for it. There is no there's no clear matrices that's been developed to be able to scale these or evaluate these. But I mean, I think that to me is the intent is to have the residency requirement. The waiver is for circumstances that are uncommon or unknown.
Rich, Mike Lane, your hand going up, Leslin? Okay. Rich.
I hear the arguments on both sides of this issue, and I think they have merit. On balance, I'm going to support the resolution to send this to public hearing. I do want to thank you for the amended language. I think it adds a safeguard in there. Thanks.
Mike Lane.
Just point out that for comparison, we faced a similar issue with the issue of nepotism a few years ago. And we decided to put into play a policy where someone who was related to someone else in a department, a supervisor, for example, could still be hired if there was a waiver, if there was a process that went through. And I think that It's not exactly the same, but it's similar, and it shows us stepping forward to not simply have a no-nepotism policy, which means that a qualified applicant could never be hired by us because he or she was related to someone. It's a more modern way of looking at things.
Leslin.
Thank you. I want to be... Again, I want to reiterate that I appreciate the compromise. We had some good conversation in committee. I have no problem with sending this to public hearing. The concerns I raise, particularly around, you know, EEO or human rights complaints or employment backlash is where it's sitting. So all the things you said about family and who's taking, God knows, I've been taking care of people for the longest while. All of that is wonderful. That's my biggest concern is once decisions get made, once something like this is on the books and somebody who applied who, you know, didn't get this job or whatever because they don't think they have a good enough reason to ask for a waiver and they're not interested in moving into the county, are we opening ourselves up to that? And all I'm asking is for people to take a little deeper look into those things. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not saying don't do, I'm saying a little deeper look. The other thing I think about is someone was talking to me about this when it started brewing around. Interesting, because people come from different places, you know, with their thinking. And folks who live here, you know, their thought process was, so what you're saying is that it was getting rid of the residency requirement, it wasn't even the waiver. If folks don't have to move in at that level who work in the county, then what you're saying is those of us who are living here and paying the exorbitant bills that they don't want to pay are doing it to allow other people to enjoy the spoils of employment in Tompkins County and not have to pay their fair share of the taxes. You know, good argument. And I said, but at that point, we weren't saying no to a residency requirement. It's just being rolled around. But that sort of thought processes that people have, and it's legitimate. We can't say it's not legitimate. So anyhow, bottom line is I'm just asking you all to really think a little deeper into as we get closer to this, what other things we might be, the what ifs. We don't have to go overboard, that we might think of it could potentially be problems for us. That's it.
Listen, I'm confused. What do you mean human rights complaints? You mean if somebody loses a job to somebody who lives here loses a job to somebody who's from out of the county?
If somebody doesn't get hired for the job, if somebody doesn't get, you know, because they don't have any elderly they're taking care of, but I do, and so, you know, I could potentially get their job and I have a waiver, or you're saying to me I have to move in, and I was like, no, I don't. You know, I don't want to. I mean, any number of factors. I think people understand what I'm saying. I can say more, you know, to Jason, to Jonathan, to whomever. But just really think about those things. Anytime you put new policy and regulations that stuff in place that's going to affect employment in one way or another, there's the potential for some sort of issue. So we should really think about it. That's all I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Overall, I appreciate the compromise.
Thank you.
Okay, Annie?
So I concur that there's the potential for at least perceived discrimination. So I just, when there's another layer of someone making a decision or getting a waiver, I just want one quick last comment. As far as the environmental aspect, which I've said before, people are one of the factors in people deciding whether to get a hybrid or a plug-in hybrid or an electric vehicle is there a place to plug in and charge their vehicle while they're at work?
I wanted to ask something from your memo, Jason.
Yes.
You pointed out, and it's partly in here about the law, that corrections officers and assistant district attorneys are already exempt, and sheriff's deputies, right? Road patrol.
Yes.
And did you write that when did we vote for that exemption?
Probation officers are in the public officers law. So probation officers and the director of probation, which is the only department head, a public officer in this case, that falls within this residency exception, qualify. Then in 2003, the legislature requested home rule legislation for deputy sheriffs, which amended the public officers law. That was a different way of doing it. Then in 2016, you passed the local law, which expanded residency to adjoining counties for ADAs as well as correction officers.
So that's interesting. Of all the categories of our staff that we've chosen to exempt, it's the law enforcement community. And I mean, since I can ever remember paying attention to public policy, an issue was about, do the police live in the community that they are, where they're enforcing the law? And it was always seen as, you know, yeah, they should. That was always a much better system. Well, but we've made a number of decisions here, one by the state with probation officers and probation director, but we've followed on with several other decisions that have said, in fact, those are exactly the people we're going to exempt from living in Tompkins County. So you weren't here, but do you have any idea why? Maybe, Jonathan, do you remember what was the argument? Was it just a recruitment problem, or what? Why did that category of employees get exempted specifically by action by this body?
Well, the DA, which was the most recent, that was because of recruitment. The sheriff, which was longer ago, that had some other factors as well, but recruitment was one of them, as I recall. That was some time ago.
Have we had any human rights complaints or about any of those hires or failures to hire?
And the sheriff one, we actually had at the time a bunch of deputies who are really not living in the county, and it was sort of an acknowledgement of reality in some.
I think there's usually several reasons, particularly on the criminal justice side of things. One can be recruitment, and the other can sometimes be safety concerns about living in the community. I've dealt with that on both ends of it. So now I'm not here. I could imagine those are probably two of the pressing issues, recruitment as well as safety.
Leslin?
So I was raising my hand because I remember distinctly that it was an issue of safety. And it wasn't just Tompkins County that was doing this. It was happening pretty much throughout the state. City police was looking at that as well, because it became really mainly an issue of safety, and it was also an issue of recruitment on a sub-level, but it was mainly an issue of safety while those exemptions got in place with those particular positions. You know, lots of threats were happening against officers, their homes, you know, arson, all kinds of things that were happening throughout the state. And that was one of the things, and we jumped on the bandwagon with it.
Okay.
Yeah, I was involved, so I know.
Okay, but and then I don't remember any human rights complaints on those positions. Am I wrong? Over the years?
Well, no, but I mean, the issue is, I mean, those are exempted completely, and that sort of Leslin's point is that if you might exempt some but not others, right, that could create that issue.
Okay.
That wouldn't be an issue with those exempted completely.
Okay. And Amanda, and then Anne, did you have your hand up? Okay, Amanda.
Call the question.
Okay. Second. All right. This is just for the public hearing. All right. All in favor of calling the question? Any opposed? That's unanimous. Oh, 11 to 1. All right. And then we will vote on Resolution L, authorizing public hearing on the residency. rule policy. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. All right. So this will go to public hearing, and maybe some of the media will cover this, and we'll hear from some public from that newspaper, right? All right. Anything else, Mike?
No, I'm done.
All right. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean, Claiborne, Chair.
No report.
All right. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
We're meeting this Friday at on the 22nd at 10:30, not 9:30. Quick, we have a 100-page agenda, a lot going on. A few things, the landlord liaison, affordable housing, landlord support, funding that was put into contingency in the budget. There's a resolution to form that task force to look at that, so I want to let people know that. Other presentations, there's three. The strategic tourism planning, the strategic tourism plan 2021 to 27, we'll be discussing that. And there is a workforce housing study that was done by the chamber, also funded through the foundation, community foundation. That is also on the agenda. We'll be discussing that. And the final thing is, and maybe of most interest to everyone, is that we will be having a discussion with Gary Ferguson from the DIA and Tom Knipe from the city and Jennifer Tavares from the chamber about the Green Street Conference Center ownership, funding, plans, deadlines, all of that. So that's my report.
Thanks, Anna. Any questions? All right. Complete Census Count Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Last committee and the longest report. We haven't met. We'll meet on December 2nd.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Any questions? All right. Mike, there was an email that went around on the Human Services Coalition listserv about jobs and the person to contact. Did you see that?
Yeah,
it went around today, and there was.
I didn't see it today. No.
I forwarded it to you, Mike. I sent it about 5 o'clock.
Because there was confusion about who to contact. Did you find out?
Yeah, I forwarded to Mike because it was Catherine Dahl, but then there was someone else in Syracuse, a Syracuse field rep, that was told to contact.
We've been told that they have to apply online. And I think if they have any questions, they ought to call. If that's a contact, I'm not sure of that one, but the contact we have is the Binghamton office.
There was a question about them tabling at Ithaca events.
To recruit job people.
And so that it was a letter from Catherine Dahl, but then someone else's name was
Lisa something.
We can set up tabling. We can get the material if that's the question.
Right, but who should the people contact?
I think it needs to contact our committee. As far as we didn't know the event, and we'd need to see who we could find to help with it.
Maybe we can do it offline.
Yeah, let's straighten this out with looking at the emails. Thank you, Henry. I'm glad you saw that. All right, can I get a motion on the minutes of November 7th? Moved by Amanda, seconded by Anna. Any suggestions, changes? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Motion to adjourn. Moved by Anna, seconded by Shauna. All in favor. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.